is give you a little glimpse at some of the things that have happened in the U.S. ministries over the past year, some of the encouraging things, some of the things that are exciting and that we're just getting underway with. I'd also like to share with you some of the ministry statistics. I don't know how you grew on statistics, but they are rather interesting and intriguing from time to time when you look at them from certain perspectives. And then I'd like to share with you a couple of concerns that I have regarding the U.S. ministries that I think we need to give some thought and prayer to in the months and possibly even years ahead. So let's begin with that which has encouraged me, or that which is encouraging, I think. Some very exciting things have happened. I think to me, one of the best things that has unfolded during the past year has been the leadership team that the Lord has given us in the United States. And it's comprised of 9 men. The 4 guys that work for me at headquarters, Bob Stevens, Jerry Bridges, Rod Sargent, and Bob Sheffield. And those 4 guys have now begun to carry just a tremendous load at headquarters. In fact, the whole, Wayne was sharing with us about delegation. Well, Wayne, I've delegated the whole thing to those 4 guys, and they are very capable of carrying the ball on it. Bob Stevens is sort of an executive assistant to me and at the same time handles all of the administrative services with the regarding the U.S. and the American ministries. Jerry Bridges is really a right-hand man to me when it comes to anything related to finances. There's hardly a question that I can come up with that Jerry doesn't have on the tip of his tongue or within 10 minutes. And that is a tremendous asset. And then he handles also all of our financial services and is responsible for that at headquarters. Rod is in charge, of course, all the fundraising activities and then the whole aspect of communications. And Chuck Unger, as you know, works for Rod. Then Chef is a tremendous addition to that team since he and Nancy and the kids have moved to Colorado Springs. And by the way, they're moved in and settled and love it, and we're very grateful that they're there and have such a willing spirit about it. Colorado Springs is a beautiful place to live, but headquarters of the Navigators is, for those who have never been there before, including us, when we moved out there, it is a culture shock, and that's the only way I can describe it. It's like moving into a foreign country. The language is the same, but that's about all. There are so many changes. I know as Carol and I look back on the move from Chicago to Colorado Springs, I think the first 6 months out there were probably the loneliest 6 months we've ever spent in our life. And that seems strange when you got Navigators all over the place, and yet it happens. I know Skip can give testimony to the same thing. He and Buzzy went through some of the similar experiences that we did. But I'm grateful that Chef is there. He has all the responsibility for Nav Press and for Glen Eyrie. And in addition to that, he's carrying a temporary role as the RD for California. Hopefully, we can come up with a long-range solution on California region by next summer sometime. That's kind of the target we're shooting for and praying about. But those 4 guys really carry a load at headquarters. And then, of course, in the field, the 5 RDs. Lewis here in the Northeast. Terry Taylor is now responsible for the Southeast region. And I was just down in Jacksonville, Florida with Terry. And the state directors from the Southeast had a great time with him. I've spent about a day and a half with him. And I am really thrilled with Terry being there. He has won the hearts of the guys already. There is no question who is in charge. And he and Carol are rising to the challenge of that big job that they've got before them. So I'm delighted that he's there. Then with Ray Ho in the Midwest, and with Jerry White having the western and the southwest region, and then Chef carrying the load in California. So the thing that is encouraging to me about all that is the stabilization that I feel, the degree of stabilization that we're at this point, both at headquarters and in the field as far as the leadership team is concerned. The second thing that is a great encouragement to me, and you'll see why a little later on as we talk about one of my, to me, what is the major concern, but this is one of the encouraging things, is our Missionary Associates Program. Some of you are familiar with that, and if you're not, I would really encourage you to become familiar with it. We're just really getting started. Bill Threlkeld is in charge of it. As near as I can remember, I think we've got 5 people now who are actually placed and overseas as a result of getting involved in this Missionary Associates thing. Basically, if you don't know what it is, it's just an effort to get people, DMs, who have come up through the NAV ministry and who have the goods as far as being able to handle a ministry, to get them overseas in a job slot so that there is no cost to the navigators and there's no long-range obligation on the part of the navigators, but we're capitalizing on some of our more proficient DMs who really have missions on their heart, but they're not going to be on the staff. And it's a very inexpensive way to get missionaries over there. Bill Threlkeld, by the way, right now is in Africa visiting Nigeria, Ghana, and Kenya to try and find job slots. We've got 15 guys that have already qualified from our standpoint, the navigator standpoint, to go. All we've got to find is openings for them in the right places overseas. And as Bill has looked into this and tried to get information on job slots, he's discovered that it's very difficult to come up with the kind of information that we need. There's no one place in the United States where you can go and it's all there. It's scattered in bits and pieces all over the country, and a great deal of it is overseas. The info never gets into anybody's file folder back here in the United States, either academic jobs or government jobs with foreign countries. And so that's why Bill has gone over there. In fact, I think 3 of the people that we have actually gotten over, we have discovered the job. The job has been discovered by our rep overseas. We haven't found it here in the States. And so Bill is talking to various academic people and government people in these countries to try and uncover some of these job slots. There's another thing that he stopped through Chicago on his way out here to the East Coast to talk to an outfit by the name of Service Master. Service Master is a cleaning and management consultant firm, and it is all the top leadership in the organization are Christians, and they have a real appreciation for the navigators. And they have franchises all over the world on their cleaning service. And so Bill has been talking on the phone with the man who heads up their foreign franchises and stops through Chicago to talk to him about the possibility of maybe some of our DMs going to work for Service Master and opening a franchise in foreign countries. So I don't know how that came out. I haven't heard from him since he talked to them about it, but we're hoping that it turns up something. Another thing that is rather exciting in light of everything that has happened this past year is the way that NAV Press ended the year. And Jerry, I meant to get to you before I got up here. Do you know just off the top of your head what the relative net profit on NAV Press was at the end of the year?
About $150,000.
Yeah. And that is somewhat borders on the miraculous. In light of the fact that we were really wondering if we were even going to break even this past year, in light of what had happened on the computer last fall and so forth, and I know that some of you have experienced some difficulties with that, and that is probably a gross understatement. But I think the thing that is exciting to me about NAV Press is the gang that we've got working there, for one thing, the people. that Dan Rich has pulled in to work around him. They are really top-drawer people. But secondly, the quality of the material that that bunch is turning out. And I think this is something that none of us would dispute. This is probably the thing that I hear the most about regarding NAB Press, the sharpness and the quality of the material and the covers and the artwork and so forth. And, of course, the quantity. We've sold more materials this past year than ever in history. Let me just say a word about what happened that caused all of you so much grief, and maybe still is. This is not by way of apology. It's simply by way of explanation. And I'm not sure I understand all of it, but as near as I do understand it, a decision was made last fall, early last fall, or maybe at the end of the summer, with regards to the computer, how to handle certain aspects of NAB Press that were already on a computer program, and we were going into a different kind of program. The whole thing was being updated and renewed. And when the new program was going to be put on stream, there was a decision that needed to be made. Do we put it on stream and run both the old and the new systems along at the same time until we work the bugs out, or do we put the new one on and go with it? And the latter decision was made. And it was a mistake. We blew it. However, as the weeks went by, we began to realize how tragic a mistake it was. And the facts of the matter are that we will probably never really, totally, resolve it. By that I mean there are people out there that owe the navigators money who we don't know anything about. We've just totally lost the records. And that's why some of you still keep getting bills, because we're not sure. The computer kicks something out and it's wrong information, and so it's sent. And so, but eventually it'll be resolved, and we'll probably have to write some of it off as a bad debt. That's a very broad generalization of what happened. I mean, it's a lot more complicated than that, I'm sure, but for my simple mind, that's about as good as I can do. I would just beg you to be a little patient with the guys when you get a bill that maybe you don't owe, and just keep loving them, and because I can assure you that none of you, not a one of you, felt worse than they did. I mean, you talk about a sick bunch of turkeys, brother. That gang at NAB Press, they were really sick when it happened. And it was one of those things that you just can't push another button and, you know, it's all right. One of those things. Another thing that is a great encouragement to me as I looked at the ministry statistics this year is what happened across the country in the disciple production, the new disciple production, and the new DM production. It's the first time in 3 years that we have had a plus percentage growth factor in both of those categories, and it's also the first time in 3 years that we have actually turned the corner on the ratio of disciples to area reps and DMs to area reps, which is kind of a worldwide view that we have taken over the last several years in terms of comparing how we're doing, comparing disciples to area reps and DMs, the new DMs to area reps. And I'll show you on a little chart that I put together what those figures are in just a minute. But it was, of course, that's the focal point of our ministry. It's probably the most significant thing that we produce, our disciples and DMs, in the grassroots part of our ministry. And so to see that turn the corner for the first time in 3 years, and it may be longer than that, I'm not sure, was a great encouragement to me, and I hope we can keep that trend going. And last fall, we talked about this in the RD meeting, And the guys were concerned about it, and we talked about it and felt that, yeah, we do really need to work on it this year, and apparently we have. So we're headed in the right direction on that one. I don't know how you view ministry statistics or how you think about them. You may swear at them for all I know, especially along about the end of the ministry year in the spring, and you know that that report is due to somebody and you got to fill it out and so forth. I take a different view of ministry statistics than that. I have, I guess, always been fascinated by it ever since we started doing it, because I have found it tremendously helpful always in my ministry to take last year's figures. And of course, when you're down there in the grass and you're doing it just yourself and your gang of guys or gals, it's not just numbers. It's people, it's names that you've got down there, and that even makes it more exciting and more alive. But to take a look at last year and see how we did in evangelism and how we're doing in growing Christians and what kind of a crop we had of new disciples and how many disciples we got on hand that we can really count on and work with this next year and how many DMs we got and how many in the basic workforce that we're sure we can really count on this next year. And you look at that from the perspective of present to the past, and then you begin to make your plans for the year to come. And there are some real clues that it can give you, as many of you are aware of, as to what you ought to do and where you ought to put your strokes and what you need to emphasize the next year. Well, just as that is true for an area ministry, it is also true with a total country like the United States. However, the thing that I will have to admit, since this is really the first time I've ever done it with the United States, I mean, where I've really gotten a hold of it, and I've been working this over on and off for the last couple of months, ever since all the ministry statistics came in and were put together, that I have vacillated between encouragement and frustration. I've never been discouraged, but it's I've been encouraged at some days, and then the next day I get frustrated trying to figure out now what really is going on. Are these statistics really accurate? Am I sure I can count on them? And of course, as you know, this is the first time, this past ministry year is the first time we've done some things. For instance, it's the first time on a national basis we've ever kept track of converts. It's the first time on a national basis we've ever kept track of GC1s and GC2s, converts that are growing and adoptions that are growing. Some of the regions have done this for a number of years, but we've never tried to put it together nationally. And as I was trying to come to grips with some of these things, I'd look at, and I was trying to figure out ways to evaluate the total ministry in the United States, just looking at the figures, and also how to look at the regions individually. Not necessarily to compare them with each other, but how to evaluate them just on their own. And at times it got a little frustrating. And then I'd look down a region and I'd see something that didn't seem to jibe. It was way out of whack in connection with all the rest of the regions. And so a couple of the RDs, I called them and I said, what's the deal on this? Are you sure your ministry statistics were right in this particular area? And I found out they weren't. That they had misinterpreted something that we had asked for. And so they had to go back and recount. And so it was a little frustrating. But we're learning. And I'm encouraged by it. One of the other reasons that it's been somewhat frustrating to me is, as I said, this is the first time I've ever done it across the board in the United States. And I've had a lot of fun with it. It's kind of fun once in a while to sit down and spend a couple hours with a calculator and some of these figures and comparing things with one thing with another and seeing how it looks. And I'll show you just one way that I've approached it here in a minute that does show us some interesting things. Whether it's showing us the right things or not, the RDs are going to have to speak to that next week when we meet back in Colorado Springs. But when I when I was a regional director back in the old Great Lakes region, I kind of grew up with it. And we kind of grew up together, and as the thing grew and developed, we developed along with the ministry, not only a knowledge of the people and the ministry, but we also developed handles by which we could get a hold of the ministry and know what was going on. You know what I mean? And the same thing happened when the Northern Division came into being. I kind of grew into that, and the gang together, we worked on it, and we developed handles as to that we could get a hold of things. We knew that this was happening because this told us that, and this told us that, and we put those two things together. It gave us a handle to hang on to, and we could count on it, plus the knowledge that we had of the field ministries just by traveling around and looking at it. Well, brother, the United States is a lot different than a region, and it's a lot different than the old Northern Division. And trying to get a hold of handles has been one of the things that's been frustrating to me. And I'm not sure that we got them yet, but it's something that I'm sure that we can come up with, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work at until we can. One thing that I have learned in this job, that it is impossible to really get a feel of the total ministry in the United States by climbing on airplanes. I mean, there just aren't enough flights, and there isn't enough time. So it's going to have to be a combination of several things. It can't just be travel. And one of those things is the statistical information that we can look at and put it together in different kinds of ways and forms. Now, one of the ways to do that I've kind of played around with a little bit is this. There's six things there in terms of ministry performance that I've just kind of arbitrarily picked as things that might be important for us to take a look at and find out ways that we can get some handles on those things as to how we're doing. How we're doing as far as our effectiveness in evangelism is concerned. How are we doing in terms of follow-up? What about the balance of our initial thrust in the ministry? By that I mean the balance of evangelism and adopting people. The growing Christian thing. What about our effectiveness in discipling? How about the extension of our ministry, the growth of it, the reaching out, the multiplication aspect of things? How are we doing there? And then what about our missions program overseas? How are we doing? And so I've wrestled with this and juggled it around and tried to think of some various ways of doing it. And I'll just share that with you. And this is something the RDs, I want to talk over with them next week and see if, you know, there's probably better ways to do it, but this is a start. Now, effectiveness in evangelism, one of the ways that we could look at that is to compare the number of converts that we had with the number in our basic workforce. It's primarily the people in the basic workforce that are doing the evangelism. Now, granted, there are some disciples who are not in the basic workforce, by the way, you realize that, and some new Christians, some growing Christians that are also doing evangelism. But it's for sure our basic workforce people are doing it, or at least they ought to be. So it's the thing that we've got a figure on, a handle on. So what those figures represent is the number of converts in the U.S., 2.8 converts per basic workforce individual, and the same figure for the Northeast region. I figured you might be interested in just seeing how the Northeast does in these things. And as you can see, the Northeast has, in comparison to the totality of the U.S., they have really hit it in evangelism. Good deal, huh? You look pretty good there, folks. Now, huh? What was that?
Encourage us while you can.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets better. I mean, worse as we go along. The extent of our follow-up. It seemed to me pretty obvious that at least one of the ways to do that was how many of the converts are being followed up on in terms of percentage. The U.S., 65%. And in the northern, the northeast region, 62%. Now, that's kind of a shaky figure. As I said, you know, statistics can lie, but what is that statement? Figures don't lie, but liars figure? Yeah, okay. The reason I say that is because, now this is very reasonable in comparison to the total U.S., the 62%. But there is one region that has in follow-up 127% of their converts. I mean, they are really doing a bang-up job in follow-up. Now, I can't explain that to you. That's just the way it comes out when you divide the two figures together. I want to ask the RD about that, but I haven't had a chance yet. So what that says is that this figure, of course, the U.S. figure, is off, unless there's some really fantastic explanation of 127% of the converts being in follow-up. So that's one of the things about this that I kind of question. But I thought I'd show that to you anyway.
They're actively in follow-up now? Or they have been?
Well, all I'm working with is numbers that they've turned in. And, of course, that's when you...
Probably still in follow-up from the previous year.
Well, it could be, yeah. I'm sure there's an explanation. And, I mean, they wouldn't lie about that. But, So what I'm saying is that may be something that we can't evaluate in this way and get something that really makes sense. Maybe we'll have to, if that's what it is, Dave, in other words, if they've got converts from the previous year that are still in follow-up, then maybe what we're going to have to do is change the way we handle the statistics to give us this year's converts and this year's people in follow-up. But maybe that's too complicated. I don't know. But anyway, that's how it worked. Now, the balance of the initial thrust, we did two things. We compared converts as a percent of them plus the GC2s. In other words, what percent of both converts and GC2s are just converts? Okay? Percent across the board in the U.S. and 50% in the Northeast. And another way to kind of get a feel of that is how many... Yeah?
I don't understand that first figure.
Okay, this is the percent of converts as compared to the total number of converts and adoptions. In other words, you add the converts and adoptions together, divide that into the number of converts. And what we're after is balance. How are we... Yeah.
Those converts in that figure, you're talking about the ones in follow-up?
No, no. No, this is total converts, right. Now, the second thing we did is do what you're talking about, is take all of the GCs and find out how many of those are adoptions. So this is a percentage of converts. This is a percent of GC2s or adoptions of the growing Christians, the total growing Christians. Okay, GC1 and GC2. You know what that is? You with me?
Growing Christians.
All growing Christians. Both those who have come to Christ through our ministry and those who have been adopted. All right, the total of those, what percent of the total are adopted? 63% are adopted. Okay?
Why doesn't it add up to 100?
No. Oh no, it's a totally. If you don't add those two together, you'd compare apples and oranges. Complicated, isn't it? Okay, what are we after? We're after the balance of our ministry. How are we doing in terms of the thrust in evangelism, in terms of converts, as compared to what we're doing in adoptions? That's what we're after. Okay, so the first figure, the 47%, is the converts. In other words, 47% of the people that we have contacted initially in our ministry are converts, by initially in our ministry, either through evangelism or through picking up an adoption. 47% of them are converts. Now, of all the people that we have in follow-up who are growing Christians, 63% of them are adopted. Okay? And, as I said, this is, on all of these figures, this is the first year we've ever done it nationally. And to me, at this point, all it is interesting. It is almost impossible to draw any kind of a judgment or a value on it because we have no trends to look at. I'm not even sure this is the right way to look at it. It's just some ideas that came to mind. Now we get to the area of discipling, effectiveness in discipling. Now we've been doing that for years, so we've got some handles that we've already worked out, and one of those is number of disciples per area rep. And in the U.S., it's 16.2 disciples per area rep. That's new disciples that we produced last year. And in the Northeast region, it's 15.5. So you're just slightly under the national average. Now the second figure here is, that's last year, new disciples. The second figure has to do with DMs, DMs to ARs. Yeah.
You're saying this is all in relation to area representatives.
Right.
Do you have some way of filtering out the contact, the number of people turned in by ministries run by contact points, or are you taking the total and just going with the total number of area reps?
Just using the area reps. This is a figure that, or a comparison that we've done for several years on a worldwide scale, just to kind of give us an idea of how we're doing. Granted, there are contact staff out there that are producing disciples and DMs. Granted, there are probably others that are doing it. But the most stable figure that we could pick when we started doing this was area reps. And so we've looked at that trend for several years. Granted, another way to do it would be to take people in ministry staff, contact staff and above, and you could make the same comparison. And as long as you're doing that across the board, why, fine. The U.S. average, 4.4, and the Northeast, 3.4. This is DMs to ARs, right?
New DMs.
New DMs, right. A third thing that I've never done before, but I thought might be interesting, is not only to compare the resource of manpower to the disciple, new disciple and new DM production, but also to compare the dollar figure. So what I did was simply take the total expenditure in the area ministries for last year, divide it by 12, and divide that by the total number of new disciples and new DMs, which gives you a monthly figure monthly dollars spent for each new disciple and new DM. And if this tells us anything, the thing that would help us is not just looking at 1 year, but it could tell us something in looking at a trend over 3 or 4 years. And we could backtrack on this one and see what it looks like. That's what it looks like. That's $142 per disciple and DM per month in the U.S. It costs you a little more than that in the Northeast. Now, I did do that for the U.S. over a 3-year period, and there is no... It's kind of like a roller coaster. It was way down 3 years ago. It was lower than that. Last year it was higher. Or the year next year it was higher than that, and then it dropped again. So it may not be a... the regions are quite spread apart. The low region is $82 per month, and the high one is $234 a month. So it's quite a spread on what it's costing to produce. But I when I see that wide a spread and that kind of a roller coaster thing on a statistic like that, I get a little suspicious of it. But like I said at the start, it's interesting, and I'm experimenting.
Per disciple and disciple.
Yeah, the total of the two put together, new ones, right? The extension of the ministry. How have we done as far as broadening out is concerned? The first figure here has to do with the, the first two of these have to do with a basic workforce. And by the way, this past year is the first time in 5 years that the actual numerical number of the basic workforce dropped. We actually had a minus percentage increase for a 5-year period. And it's something we want to talk about next week with the RDs. There are probably some reasons for that, but it's a little bit of a cause for concern. This figure is the staff. Now, this would be ministry staff in the areas as a percent of the basic workforce. The basic workforce, very simply defined, is DMs and above who are tied into the NAP ministry. So, in the U.S., across the board, 17% of the basic workforce are staff. In the Northeast, 20%. It would seem that if that is a valid figure, a valid comparison to make, to see some trends, that the lower we can get that percentage, the better off we are, the better job we're doing. Now, of course, it's obvious. You can lower that percentage just by herding people into the basic workforce. So, you know, you can beat the odds. This next one is a little bit complicated, but it is interesting. It has to do with the loss of DMs to the basic workforce on a percentage basis. You start with the figure of last year's basic workforce. What did we have at the end of the ministry year? Then for the present year, you would add to that the new DMs that were produced, who should, everything being equal, go into the basic workforce. Then you subtract from that the present year's basic workforce at the end of the year. And then you divide that by the previous year's basic workforce and the present year's new DMs, and you get this kind of percentage. Right. It sounds complicated, but it really isn't once you do it on a piece of paper. It's a rather staggering figure in a way, and I'm not sure how to really look at it. But man, we are losing an awful lot of DMs somewhere. They're falling out of the holes like crazy.
Jack, does this take into consideration moves where you really don't lose them, but they have moved to some other area that may be productive?
Well, when I say lose, I'm talking about losing to the basic workforce, that they are not being incorporated, tied into the NAB ministry somehow. That's what, when I say lose, that's what I mean. Now, there are some things I know that are happening. I've talked to enough guys, for instance, who are involved with alumni ministries in the community to realize that they are finding that a DM on the college campus is not necessarily a DM when he gets into the job world. And some of them never make it. Some of them, it takes them a year or two to get up to steam. And so that's probably where some of them are going. And there are probably some other explanations, but it's something I think that is interesting and we need to at least take a good look at. Yeah, John?
Maybe this is insignificant, but if I understand the basic workforce, a couple counts as one.
Right.
So every time a girl DM gets married...
That's right, brother.
I mean, that's a,
yeah, it's a loss on as far as statistics go, yeah. Yeah. Stop it? Should we stop it, you say? Yeah. Chris?
We found out
Well, yeah, well, you've mentioned several that are feasible reasons why some of this happens. Taking this calculation, by the way, and looking at it over a 3-year period, the last 3 years, somewhere along the line in the last 3 years, we have lost at least 1,486 former DMs that they've dropped out of the basic workforce someplace in 3 years. So, you know, it's something to think about.
We don't have anything to relate to other work.
This percentage is just percentage of increase in the staff this year over last year. Nationwide, we increased 15%. And now this, I'm talking about ministry staff, contact point and above. And in the Northeast, you had a whopping increase, 30% last year. The last item has to do with our overseas mission, and this brings me to one of the things that I am... in fact, it's probably the thing that causes me more concern than anything else. In light of the trend that I see, this first figure, the 33% and the 28%, represents gift income for overseas as a percent of the total ministry gift income for the U.S. By that I mean all the money we spend in the ministry in the U.S. and all the money we spent in terms of gift income in the ministry overseas. This is the overseas portion. 33% of that total was missionary. In the Northeast, it was 28%. Now, that 33% is the tail end of a downward trend. For instance, this is 1977, this figure here. 1976, it was 35%. 1975, it was 37%. So we are, in terms of the proportion of what we are spending on ourselves at home and what we are spending on missions, we are spending less on missions year after year after year, at least for the last 3 years we have. Now, when I come back to that in just a minute, There are some reasons probably why that is happening, but I still don't like the trend, regardless of what the reasons are. Now, another thing that is an indication of this, let me give you this last one first because it's more comparable to the other. The 36% and the 28% here are simply the same comparison, only in terms of reps instead of dollars. In other words, you take the total reps, you take the total American reps in the ministry in the United States and overseas, and divide that into the number of reps overseas, and the number of reps overseas are 36% of that total. Women. In the same period of time, the last 5 years, we have sent 44 representatives overseas, 44 out of 99 new produced, which is really pretty good. In fact, it's sensational. Right? That's the kicker. In that same time period, the last 5 years, 29 have come home permanently, which means we have had a net gain of 15 area reps go overseas in the last 5 years, or 3 a year. Now, that's another reason why I'm concerned about our whole missions program. I wish I had answers for a lot of questions that grow out of those three figures. I don't at this time. I've got one of the guys at headquarters working on a little project to investigate all 29 of those reps and why they came back. It's an issue that I want to bring up at the ILT meeting in December, because I think it's cause for real concern. Just for our morale in terms of a missionary advance and thrust, because I know a lot of our gang in the U.S. really have it on their hearts. And I personally feel that we've got to do something to change this trend. Now, of the 29, it may be of interest to you, of the 29 who have returned, 13 of them are in the community ministry, tied in here in the U.S. 3 are in the student ministry. 3 are in the military ministry. 3 are at headquarters. And 7 have resigned from the Navigators. Now, another reason... Yeah, Doug?
Do you have a total number of U.S. reps overseas that we can compare, like the 29?
Well, at the beginning of 19... Yeah. At the beginning of 1973, which would have been 5 years ago, you know, at the end of... And we had 66 American missionary reps overseas at the beginning of 1973. 66. At the end of the ministry year, August 31, 1977, we had 81, which is an increase of 15 in 5 years. Is that what you were after, Doug?
Yes, I thought the number were larger than 20, you know, the percentage of the number that actually came back from the number that were there would be a difference. It looks like it's a substantial amount came back compared to the total number out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like about a third.
66 plus 44.
Well, in fact...
29 out of 110.
Yeah. Yeah, almost a third. You know, about a fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Do the 29 that are home permanently know that? Do they know they're home permanently?
What's
permanently? I think so, for all practical purposes. Do you have somebody or something in mind? I mean...
Well, don't we go kind of from assignment to assignment and term to term?
Well, what I mean by permanently is they are home and they're not going back to the assignment which they left, as far as we know. Now, they could end up...
They're not actively planning to return, but...
Right. They could. Okay. Yeah. And by the way, this does not include the three guys who are connected with the China Task Force, Jake and Choate and Einan. We're still considering them to be overseas reps, whether they're overseas or not. Yeah, Jim.
Do you happen to know how many non-U.S. area reps were made during those 5 years?
Non to gift income again, and this is just some comparisons for the last 3 years of how our missionary and home spending in terms of gift income compares. We just took a look at the 1 year, the 1977 figure. This represents dollars, and you add three more zeros to the end of these. This represents the percent of change from year to year. This is the home dollars spent. This is the mission dollars, the percent of change, and then the ratio between the two. And you can see, back in 1975, the ratio was 63% we spent at home and 37% overseas. In 1976, we spent more at home, 65% and 35%. And last year, it dropped another 2 percentage points, 67 and 33. And so the trend is in the wrong direction. Yeah.
Are we part of a worldwide trend, or is it
here specifically? Keep looking unto Jesus. We're on the winning team. And we're going to see great and mighty things happen. Call unto me, and I will show you great and mighty things which thou knowest not. And I don't know about you, but I am absolutely so turned on about what God is doing and the job that we've got in front of us that there are some mornings I get out of bed so excited I can hardly stand it. So let's just stay with it. Keep doing what we're doing, only more of it. Okay? Thanks a lot for listening.